Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have our third guest with us of the Amateur Passionate Cooks, Kevin Gillespie. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank
you. Hey, Kevin. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down.
It's my pleasure.
And so one of the things that's been cool so far is finding out people's motivations or what their sparks were or who their inspiration was or was there an experience or something. You care about food and cooking.
Absolutely.
Give people a little perspective on how you got started. What excited you as a child, or at what point did you just decide, I've been eating dull food and this is interesting, I'm going to be into this?
Well, I think it was something partly that came a little bit naturally. It was always important in my house, dinner, family dinner. And of course, my mother has always been a tremendous cook. And
that's great.
Yeah, when we were really young, it was always very, you know, your kids, when you have little kids, it's got to be sort of rudimentary, you know, macaroni and cheese-based meals. And then from there, as we got older, the sort of horizons of the types of food we would eat or have as dinner together expanded from there exponentially all over the place. And her love for it sort of expanded, and mine, by proxy, expanded for it immensely as well. And my first job was in an Italian deli in the county and an Italian restaurant as a busboy. And I became really close with the owners of those establishments and, you know, learned how to make ravioli in the back and started learning fundamentally how to make things that were simple Italian dishes. And that's where my love for cooking really blossomed, was cooking Italian food. And then from there, when I went off to college, I tried to recreate a lot of that stuff on my own. And gosh, I guess it started to expand beyond that when I got back from college and just started really diving into it and really getting into going out to restaurants and experiencing food and seeing things and just being blown away by how...
And then wanting to go home and...
Yeah.
Recreate it.
And recreate or do your own riff on it, maybe.
Or just making a complete mess of it and trying to figure out why and trying to understand, man, what did I miss here?
Right.
What didn't I get right?
That's good. That's a process.
Who do you cook for?
During the week, I pretty much cook for me. Because I'm only cooking for one person in my household. So I come home and I roast a chicken and I have it for a couple of days.
Yeah,
and
that's smart.
I do stuff like that I can do pretty quickly, pretty easily, that are pretty easy to handle. And it's not a big deal if I come home at 7 o'clock and start.
Yeah.
But on the weekends, I like to experiment. And I like to really dive in and try to do something interesting. And honestly, whenever I have friends over, whether it's after going out with friends or just having friends over for dinner, I love to cook for four, love to cook for two, love to cook for those kinds of settings because it's easier to manage than trying to cook for eight, and I've never had to cook for eight, thankfully. I don't think I can imagine what that would be like.
Or 800.
Yeah, exactly. There's the big difference.
It's an engineering
situation. I can't even imagine.
Did you grow up with a garden or anything like that at your house?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good.
And just like our interest in cooking, that expanded, you know, the depth and the amount of different types of things that we would grow at home grew over the years.
And did you help with it or did your mom and dad do it? Or?
You know, really, they love to do it. And as a kid, I did not want to go in the garden.
I'm sure. Yeah, I get it.
It's funny. I think about you're a good deal younger than we are.
Mm-hmm.
How much... Television cooks for us were mostly maybe seeing Julia Child something like that.
Julia's incredible.
But or the Galloping Gourmet or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was
right.
Ridiculous.
From when we were little,
really good
early.
From when we were kids, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but for you, there's a giant world of like foodertainment.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That is crazy
change.
Stuff. Do you watch that stuff and does that inspire you or horrify you or...
It inspires me, I have to say. I mean, that's where I discover a lot of the unique or interesting things that I would otherwise have no exposure to or no understanding of the depth of how interesting of what they're doing at their restaurants or, you know, what foods in different locations of the world are like. You know, you just don't have any sort of intimate exposure to it unless you see it on television and then read about it and explore it and then try to get yourself there and go have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the world we live in now just offers that so much more exponentially greater than what you guys had.
Well, all the information in the world is at your fingertips, literally. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and we actually had a set of encyclopedias in our house. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was like cool because I had those, and I was lucky that I didn't have to go to the library every minute for all the reports we had to do because we had encyclopedias. I mean, that's just sad when you think about it now. And it's just but that's how it was. Mm-hmm. And when we were lucky to have those.
How amazing is it to have things in encyclopedias?
Oh yeah.
Right.
To have information like that. I mean, that's remarkable.
So how, as far as equipping your kitchen, and you are young, so mm-hmm. you probably don't have a lot of time to fill up a kitchen, but what kind of equipment do you have, and what do you love? And
it's never enough.
Well, right? I could say the same thing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it can never be enough. I think my kitchen is a very tight space, a very, like, European-style apartment-type kitchen.
Okay.
So I've got one four-top stove, one oven, a small fridge, and then downstairs a large fridge with a freezer. And I've got one wall to work with a decent amount of space and a handful of large cabinets. But I have everything I need to do savory cooking as well as I would want to. Enough strainers, you know.
Good.
My favorite stuff is all of my pots and pans and my strainers because I use them constantly. And I have to say my cast iron has got to be the best one because it's so amazing.
Good. Did you buy it or did you get it from a family member?
So that's kind of something every single year. What do you want for your birthday or Christmas? I need this. I need that. I need this.
That's
so
good.
I do it, and I do it on my own. Sometimes I get an impulse to make a dish, and I'm like, oh, man, I need a diffuser to do that. Well, I'm going to the store, you know, or, oh, man, I don't have enough.
You're committed.
Yeah.
That's good.
Especially if a dish, like anything in particular, really intrigues me, and I want to try to, you know, to me, I think about it like, oh, man, I want to be able to conquer that, like, without feeling nervous about it. I want to be able to do that. I just go and get the tools I need to make it and start trying to make it and just keep doing it.
Exactly. Do you have a torch to do creme brulee at home?
No. I have to be honest. Baking is the next new domain for Kevin.
Okay.
I do not have any grasp of it. It's something I really want to be able to do. And
well, that's science.
I'm committed to
and
it.
And that's the difference.
Yeah.
You know, when we cook with, you know, let's say you just, you know, you're talking about a breakfast burrito or you're talking about something simple that you're making for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the process of understanding how to make it in the beginning and then, oh, well, I'm going to add this today.
There's a million variations.
Right. But with pastry, it's like, oh, gosh, I have to get the recipe out. I have to follow it exactly. I need to make sure I've sifted my flour and remeasured it. I mean, pastry is so scientific, and it's such a different world from savory cooking.
But it's got to be a delight
awesome,
to get
though.
It out right.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Don't begin by trying to do something nuts or, you know, something that's going to have a big failure factor.
Souffle.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
honestly,
we were talking about earlier.
That's kind of my MO in the cooking world especially. Well, I guess with savory.
You're a high wire act, is that true?
I really do.
What cookbooks do you have at home?
Top three.
Okay, I'll leave it to three. Noma from Rene Redzepi. Bouchon from Thomas Keller. French Laundry, Bouchon, because I love that book.
He writes really good cookbooks.
Doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. His instruction and stories are
mm-hmm.
very nice.
On point.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I think if those are the top two, La Russe Gastronomique,
there
just because
go.
I can get anything from
there
it.
There you go. Right on. You're smart.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you have that. Very good. That's one of the books I suggest.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever seen Jacques Pepin's La Méthode and La Technique?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And you can get in paperback now. Mm. And they used to be two separate books.
Really?
So now you can get one in paperback.
It's like,
and that's, well, and for people that are trying to learn, it's perfect because it has, you know, step-by-step photographs mm-hmm. as well as instructions. So it's a really good learning tool. So
yeah.
I suggest that. And also Anne Willen's books because she had La Varenne in Paris. Yeah. And she's, she has really written some of the best cookbooks ever written.
Wow.
All of them are incredibly instructional. And La Varenne was one of the first ones that she wrote. And that's really great. So, but anything basically by her would be really helpful to you if you have an interest in French cooking.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Have you ever been to Europe?
So I've been there twice.
Oh, good.
I went once as a musician and once with my family. We have family friends that are from, originally from Dunkirk, and they moved, the young man who actually came here and stayed with us for about a summer through a student exchange program, we became very close with his whole family, and he got married 2009,
mm-hmm.
so we went to his wedding.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, in Normandy.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe that? Yeah.
Good for you.
It was incredible.
Wow.
It was a French wedding in Normandy was unbelievable. Everybody had their own pâté. Everybody had their own liquor that they made.
How good was the Pont l'Évêque?
Oh, my gosh. Right. Everything
the
was amazing.
So
that's the thing.
There.
That's the thing in Normandy that they have the famous cheeses of Camembert and Pont l'Évêque, but but it's not like what you get here and what you get in the rest of France is not like what you get in Normandy.
And on addition to that, the Calvados, the homemade Calvados. Oh my gosh. That was wonderful.
Good.
Yeah.
That's a great experience.
Yeah, and I spent, that's really the extent of my time in Europe. I mean, just France and northern France at that, and some time in Paris. I know
you're
it's exceptionally fortunate, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So if there is there a place that you're dying to eat? That
Copenhagen,
you're dying to
get Denmark,
to?
Noma.
Of course. That's no
I'm
surprise.
Sorry, but I knew it. Yeah. You know, I read today. He
this
published.
Is what comes from the publicity-driven generation.
that's interesting.
He published a week ago that he's going to close Noma in December 2016, and he's going to change the whole dynamic of what he's going to do with his restaurants. And the whole point of what he's doing there, from what I can understand it, is everything has to be grown and sourced completely locally, and not just farm to table, because it's beyond that extent. Mm-hmm. It's what can we grow in this climate different times of year, and that's all we're going to use. And I want to see what that's like. I want to experience that. Plus, he trained with Ferran Andrea at El Bowie. He trained with Thomas Keller in Yountville. I just want to see what this guy's restaurant is like.
Yeah. Our world is very different from how it used to be. It's unbelievable how it's changed. And mm-hmm. and people's priorities and focus is not always on.
Yeah.
Something that tastes unbelievable.
Right.
It was not on feeding people either. So.
Right.
Honestly, I liked your comment.
It's a big change.
About a year ago, I heard a broadcast from you guys, and I was driving somewhere, and you were talking about El Bowie, and you said, you know, sometimes I just want food to look like food.
Yes.
I actually really like that comment.
It's true.
It's really cool when you do clever stuff.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's also
amazing,
really cool when you're hungry and you get fed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's almost an XY axis of,
yeah.
And it's each individual diner, you know, that they have feelings about these things. How much entertainment do you want from the experience versus how much traditional satisfaction, traditional perfection do you want from it?
Mm-hmm.
And is it the entertainment perfection of the dish or is it the actual technical perfection of the dish?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of, and also there's a certain amount of rhythm to menus and a rhythm to an experience that that is either dull or it's not or it's interesting or
right, an actual arc to it.
And some things set up other things. And a lot of classical Japanese tasting menus always have one course is always out of balance in one direction.
Yeah.
It's too much bitter.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much sour. There's too much sweet. There's too much spice.
Yeah.
But each one makes the other one, you know, there's a roller coaster of that menu.
And it makes the other food sing.
And it makes exactly.
Wow.
And when you get very simple things inserted into that process, beautiful rice, really remarkable rice.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, this is, you know, your whole palate's been reset by the time you ever get there.
I like
and
that.
And there's a thoughtfulness to that.
Yeah.
I think when the art is thoughtful
mm-hmm.
and the technical achievement is thoughtful
mm-hmm.
and it's actually a person cooking for a person instead of a person cooking for their fame
mm-hmm.
or a person cooking for the press.
Yeah.
I think then both the soul of the diner and the soul of the cook should be much more satisfied.
You know, I appreciate that absolutely. And I think I feel that way about Thomas Keller when he cooks because I was at Bouchon in New York this summer and his director of marketing sat right next to me. She was trying new courses. And I was asking her about the process or working for his machine that is his restaurant business. And she said, every time I come into French Laundry, he comes out afterwards and he says, why didn't you like 4? Why didn't you like 6? Yeah. And he knows exactly why, because he's watching every single plate on the way back and he's making sure every single customer liked it. And I think that's really impressive.
There's a certain
absolutely. He's a great chef.
Paranoia. Yeah.
Very talented man.
There's
absolutely.
A certain paranoia that you have to have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I watch every plate that goes by me.
I'm sure you do.
I do. I'm just like, did they eat it all? And if they and the waiters are all, they're all ready with their answer.
Well,
because they know I'm going to say, why didn't they eat all that? And that's all I want. I want mm-hmm. my guests to love every single thing that they eat.
Yeah.
And if they don't, and that's okay, it's okay. Please give me the opportunity to give you something that you do love.
Yes.
I want you to leave happy
mm-hmm.
and to have really enjoyed everything. And we're not always all on the same page about what we do and don't like. So
mm-hmm.
that's okay and understandable. But my goal is to make you know, everyone happy.
And you know,
extremely happy.
As an amateur chef, you have a difficulty there because on the one hand, everybody wants to be cordial and nice and nobody ever wants to say, oh, that wasn't exactly what it could have been. But on the other hand, you want to achieve that level of excellence in your food and you know whether or not you do it great when you have the chance to taste it at that particular moment. But sometimes you're serving so many people, you're not even thinking about it. about your experience. You want to make sure their experience is great. And as an amateur chef, the only time that I get that opportunity is when I try to cook something that you make or somebody else makes, when I go visit a restaurant that they have. And I can say, okay, this is what this is supposed to taste like. Mm. When it hits the floor, mm-hmm. that's how it's supposed to taste.
That's cool. So, Kevin, what is your favorite thing to cook? I can't wait to hear.
As much and as diverse of all my interests are in food and trying to explore the really difficult things, as I've mentioned before, I mean, it really is roasting a chicken. Just because it's not because it's easy, but it's because it's just so perfect. I love it. When you do it right, it's just so excellent. Mm-hmm. And I love to do it in a million different ways. I mean, I've tried everything you can think of. You know, you brine them, spatchcock them, just put them in a roasting pan. And I love it every single way and every time I do it.
It can be very satisfying. Mm-hmm. Have you ever worked with foie gras at home?
Foie gras? Mm-hmm. No, I've made pâté, but I've never worked with foie gras.
That might be fun for you to try.
I will.
I mean, obviously an expensive product, but, you know, since you seem to, you're so enthusiastic about cooking, it might be fun for you to, you know, just try something that's really, really going to push you.
It can be one of my adventures in the weekend, I'm
there
sure.
There you go.
Organ meats are their own challenge.
Ooh, yeah, sweetbreads. You could try sweetbreads sometime, too.
I would love to try that stuff. Absolutely.
We have no program where Cindy does not mention sweetbreads. She loves them. She loves them so much.
Oh, my goodness. And I love them,
It's
too.
What's for breakfast. Anyway, we really appreciate you coming on.
Yes, hey, it's great to talk with you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the development of your cooking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And getting to Noma or any of the other interesting places you want to get to.
I want to hear about Noma after you come back.
I will visit you
in
Charleston. You
have to come see me, please.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for listening to Foreman and Wolf on WYPR. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Have a wonderful Sunday.